Iku Iluna, please rise.
Ahea oko eko ka aha. Inahe kuliana imua okea. Aha ho o kolo kolo ki ike hanohano. Oka moku aina o Hawaii. E naoi mai, e maliu mai, e lohe ia kaleo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. E noho ilalo, please be seated.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC-19-697, State of Hawaii versus Paula Ibarra and Gustavo Ferreira. Arguing for the petitioner, Paula Ibarra, Myron H. Takemoto. Arguing for the respondent, State of Hawaii, Brian R. Vincent. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning. Aloha, everyone. Today's proceeding is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel, as well as on Olelo. Mr. Takemoto and Mr. Vincent, are you both ready to proceed? All right. All right. Just to confirm, you both have 30 minutes for your arguments. Mr. Takemoto, you've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning light 25 minutes in. And Mr. Vincent, we will give you a warning as well with 5 minutes to go in your argument. And counsel, if you wish, you may remove your mask during the proceeding. Mr. Takemoto, please proceed.
May it please the court. Morning, Chief Justice Reckonwald and Associate Justice Myron Takemoto on behalf of petitioner, respondent, petitioner, appellant, defendant, Paola Ibarra. Ms. Ibarra, my client, and the complaining witness, Ms. Bethel, came to Hawaii for a specific purpose. That purpose was for vacation, but also to engage in prostitution. They both came to Hawaii willingly of their own free will with no force, no threats, no compulsion, no intimidation. They both flew to Hawaii with the specific intent to enjoy our beaches, but also to engage in prostitution. They were here for what the complaining witness deemed a paycation, to be paid while on vacation. And that's what transpired here. The complaining witness was a willing participant in all aspects of this particular case. She contacted my client via Instagram to come with her to Hawaii. She flew willingly to Hawaii with the specific purpose of enjoying our weather, but also to engage in prostitution. She also willingly provided photographs from her Instagram, private Instagram account, and that was used for prostitution ads. She also posed provocatively in lingerie on the hotel balcony and a hotel bed, also to be used in prostitution ads in Backpage.com. Furthermore, Miss Bethel, the complainant, had her cell phone at all times. And with her cell phone, she accepted text messages and phone calls from possible Johns, and it not only accepted the calls, but made the arrangements, set the prices, and willingly engaged in sex acts of her own free will. Our position is that her testimony was really not credible with respect to a number of aspects of this case. She indicated that she knew nothing about coming to Hawaii to engage in prostitution. That was contradicted by Samantha King, her friend that she admittedly on a text message that this person, Sammy, that she was trapping with in San Francisco.
I'm a little bit confused, counsel. I thought you were raising legal issues, not issues of credibility here.
I am raising legal issues, and I apologize. I want to give a little bit of background before I get into the issues before the court. And I know you've all read the our briefing.
If you could, Mr. Takemoto, the theory, at least at the circuit court, believed your client could be convicted on was one of profiting from prostitution. And the statute for that talks about a person accepting or receiving money, anything of value, or other property pursuant to an agreement or understanding with any person whereby the person participates in or is to participate in the proceeds of prostitution activity. And there are other portions of the statute which I won't read, but why do you believe the evidence was insufficient or to satisfy or for the state to approve that element of the case?
Well, first of all, our argument is that she did not profit from prostitution. The money that she did receive was for basically reimbursement for the airfare and half of the hotel. So she didn't profit. She didn't make any money in the financial accounting sense.
Mr. Takamura, let's say a sex trafficker buys somebody some fancy clothes, shoes, jewelry, fronts a hotel room. That for prostitution services, that prostitute then is indebted. She gives the earnings that she makes to the pimp. You know, under your profit interpretation, which really ignores accepting or receiving money, the language of the statute, can the pimp say, "Hey, look, I didn't profit. I'm still owed money. I didn't commit any crimes."
Under the accepting or receiving, I agree with you.
Well, that's the profit, right?
Right. Correct. But my second argument, as far as the profiting from prostitution, is that the definition of 712.1201 subsection 2, the profit for prostitution, that definition is overbroad, overreaching, disregards the legislative intent of this statute, which is to prohibit the commercial sexual exploitation.
I'm sorry to interject. So are you suggesting that sometimes it's okay, sometimes it's not? And in your case, it's not okay to interpret, or it is okay to interpret this profit. I call it the profit interpretation of accept or receive money.
I'm understanding your question.
So let me get it straight. Are you saying that as applied, it's overbroad to your client?
Yes, correct. And not only is it overbroad to my client, I mean, generally speaking, it is overbroad because under the definition of the statute, any person who receives money for any purpose or any reason, knowing that it's coming from proceeds from prostitution, that could be profiting from prostitution.
But Mr. Takamura, doesn't that ignore the requirement that it be pursuant to an agreement or understanding? There has to have been an agreement that this is why the money was being given or why money was being advanced, that it was for purposes of prostitution. So it's not just money given after the fact. There has to be an agreement. What would your analysis be of that portion of the statute?
Well, I agree that there was an agreement between my client, and the circuit court did find that there was an agreement that this money was for half the share of the hotel room and the airfare. However, our position is that this statute is so overbroad that it leads to absurd results. And let me explain. And why I say it could lead to absurd results. In this particular case, there were co-prostitutes. There was not a situation where there's a pimp trafficker. And I think the circuit court did explicitly find that they were co-prostitutes.
Mr. Takamura, what is the difference between the scenario that Justice Edens presented, kind of like a pimp? It takes a girl, a runaway off the street, and said, you know what, I'm going to put you up in a hotel, and I'm going to buy you nice clothes. I'm going to feed you. I know you're hungry. I'm going to feed you. But you got to work it off later. This one is, I'll give you a flight to Hawaii. I'll pay the hotel, but you got to work it off later and pay me back.
The difference is the complaining witness in this case initiated the contact. She was the person who contacted my client and said, I want to come with you to Hawaii, knowing full well she was a prostitute.
I know that. I mean, I read that.
Right.
But how does it differ from the fact that she advanced payment expecting to get paid back from prostitution services? The same as a pimp.
The difference is that in this particular case, the money that was received essentially was for repayment. It's like she accepted the money to make yourself financially whole again. It was not to make a profit, not to, it was essentially a girl trip. And that's why the complaining witness had indicated this was a vacation. She could get paid while she was on vacation.
Can I ask for some clarification on that, Mr. Takamoto? You're addressing the issue of profit, and is it your position that there is no evidence in this case that Ms. Ibarra profited from the activities of Bethel?
Under the initial argument I made, she didn't profit. She didn't make any money off of this.
So that's your position. She didn't profit.
She did not profit. Under the statute of accepting and receiving, under that statute, our argument is that the statute is overbroad and leads to absurd results.
Well, I suppose that's one way to look at it. Are you suggesting that the language defining profits from prostitution should be seen in light of the legislative intent, which was supposed to focus on sex trafficking and pimping?
That's what my argument is. That's the thrust of my argument, is that the legislative intent in the 2008, 2011, 2016 amendments, they all address issues pertaining to sex trafficking, exploitation of minors, and things of that nature.
In that case, if we accept the proposition of the circuit court that the language that says accepts or receives money or other property is to be taken just literally, in that case, wouldn't it lead to the result that anybody who receives money from a prostitute and then with the understanding that the money actually was a result of prostitution, anytime that happens and they're in violation of 712-1201. So for example, if an individual at the supermarket is paid with proceeds of prostitution, knowing that it came from prostitution, that retailer would be guilty of violating 712-1201.
They would under the statute.
Really? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's a possibility. Knowing that money is coming from, and that's my argument why it leads to absurd results. I mean, theoretically, a landlord renting to a tenant who is a known prostitute, knowing that this person only receives their money from prostitution, accepts that as rent money, theoretically, under this particular statute as written, would be guilty as a possible profiting from prostitution.
Be pursuant to an agreement. Your hypotheticals sort of read out the pursuant language. In other words, under your reading would be knowing or understanding that the money came from prostitution. But there's another requirement, which is that it be pursuant to an agreement, which, you know, to me suggests there'd be some understanding in advance that this is what is going to happen, that the person's going to profit from it. Now, at least that's one reading, and I'll be sure to ask Mr. Vincent about that. But what's your take? I mean, your interpretation seems to ignore the fact that it has to be pursuant to an agreement, not just that the person knows or understands, but the statute requires there be pursuant to that agreement. So that, I think, wouldn't that, how is it that if somebody at the store takes money at the checkout counter knowing that this person's a prostitute, how is that pursuant to an agreement?
Well, my interpretation, pursuant to an agreement or understanding that money is coming from prostitution.
Yeah. If that were the statute, you wouldn't need the word pursuant, because you would just say knowing or understanding that the money came from prostitution. So to me, it seems like your approach doesn't give meaning to the term pursuant to, which implies some advanced understanding, some knowledge that before the act takes place, perhaps, that this is what's going to happen, and that there'll be a share of the money will come to that person. What's your thoughts about that? In other words, how is it that, what's your reading of what pursuant to means?
My reading or my understanding of this statute is that the pursuant to an agreement or understanding is, it was, you receive the money pursuant to an agreement that money is to be, or that the receipt of it is prostitution rent from money from prostitution rendered services. So
Webster's defines pursuant to as in carrying out in conformity with or according to. So in conformity with an understanding that the person participates or is to participate, it appears to go along with your argument. However, my question is, are you then conceding that if there is substantial evidence that, for example, your client received anything more than an actual reimbursement, then your client is profiting from prostitution?
Yes.
All right. Yes. And your argument is that there is no such evidence in the record.
Correct. Well, the complaining witness did indicate that she turned all her money over, not pursuant to an agreement or understanding. She indicated on direct, I believe it was direct, that she gave all the money because she felt bad that my client paid for the airfare and was paying for the hotel room. So she, if you take her testimony as is, as credible, then my client's not guilty of profiting from prostitution because there's no agreement or understanding.
Are you suggesting that essentially the state has to sort of do an accounting, you know, how much was the hotel room, how much was the airfare, and present that evidence to the jury and subtract that from whatever money, you know, Ibarra paid to Bethel?
That's my initial argument. My second argument is that, again, the statute is so overbroad, you know, and didn't take into consideration the legislative history. I mean, the purpose of this statute was to prevent the commercial sexual exploitation of prostitutes by sex traffickers, by pimps, and also by habitual patrons. That's not the scenario that we have here. Factually, in this particular case, she was not a sex trafficker. She was not a pimp, and she didn't profit. She didn't make any money off of her.
Wasn't there testimony from the defendant that they would go on dates together and that was for security reasons?
They did go on the, well, in all situations, they went together.
Correct. And the reason for that was security, is I think what her answer was.
Yes. I mean, basically, just to make sure nothing goes wrong or they're in a safer position.
So is that a form of benefit to your client in this case? That by paying to have the complaining witness come with her to Hawaii, she in essence had someone who could provide her with security while she was doing what she was doing? Is that benefit in any way affect the analysis, or do you think that's irrelevant?
I think that goes more towards the advancing prostitution that you would assist. But the circuit court did find in this particular case that Ms. Ibarra was not advancing prostitution because at all times, all relevant times, she was acting as a prostitute, which is an exception to the advancing prostitution subsection, which is not available in the profiting for prostitution.
Mr. Tuck, oh, I'm sorry. I was going to ask about the motion for a new trial. The Justice Wilson, if you have a further question.
Okay, then I had one more question along these lines. So if, assuming that the statute's overbroad, what is the relief you're looking for? You want us to interpret it more narrowly? And what does that mean to you?
Well, I'm sorry, that's not something that I contemplated prior to oral arguments, but
well, you're arguing the statute's overbroad. So what's the consequence of a finding that's overbroad from your point of view?
That the motion for JE should be granted. That the judgment of acquittal should be granted. Because as applied to Ms. Ibarra, that there was no substantial evidence that she engaged in profiting for prostitution. Accordingly, the JE should be granted and the case should be dismissed. There's insufficient evidence because the profiting for prostitution is so overbroad and as applied to Ms. Ibarra, and it doesn't follow along the lines of the legislative intent of this particular line of statutes, which is sex trafficking, promoting prostitution, that it should not be applied to her. And it, accordingly, the JA should be granted. That's
I have another hypothetical question. You've indicated that if your client had received anything more than what she was, what she had advanced for air or hotel, she would have profited. So my question then is this: what if owner of a food truck knows that, you know, these patrons engage in prostitution, and in addition to the $10 plate lunch, someone leaves another $10 tip? Then has the owner of that food truck profited from prostitution based on your definition?
Well,
because the owner received more than what was due for the plate lunch.
I guess if the tip is part of the payment, the answer would be no. If the tip is extra, possibly yes. But I'm sorry.
100% tip, a $10 plate lunch, a $10 tip.
But
the food truck owner profited from prostitution based on your definition?
Well, I guess under my definition, yes. Under the statute, accepting or receiving, you know, that money, knowing that money is coming from prostitution rendered services. I mean, could result in this wide net of profiting for prostitution is my argument.
Mr. Takamoto, I wanted to ask about your motion for new trial, and I think you're also raising the question of whether there was plain error or prosecutorial misconduct when the prosecuting attorney cross-examined your client and suggested she had engaged in the ultimate act of betrayal by having sex with other men while in a relationship with her co-defendant. Could you please explain that argument for the court?
Yes. During cross-examination, the deputy prosecuting attorney asked multiple questions on irrelevant and prejudicial matters in this case. Essentially, she was indicating that my client had concealed her prostitution activities to her her boyfriend, the co-defendant in the case. Also, that she was cheating on him by having sexual encounters with other men. And thirdly, the ultimate act of betrayal.
Mr. Takamoto, you were trial counsel, right?
Correct.
And if it was improper questioning, why didn't you object?
Well, some of it did come up in my direct. Some of it did come up. I mean, a lot of it did come up in direct.
You asked her about it in your direct.
Okay.
So why are you now saying that it's improper when you did not object as trial counsel?
Well, in review of possible, well, at the time, I did not object for trial strategy purposes.
Well, then you didn't bring it up in your opening brief either. It wasn't until your reply brief that you kind of skirted around the issue a little bit, but you didn't even talk about plain error at the ICA.
Yeah, correct. It was not included in the opening brief, but the issue was raised, and it's my understanding that the Supreme Court has the ability or the power to consider it if it's raised. And I anticipated a question from you on that with respect to not objecting. And I did not object at trial. And again, it was for trial strategy purposes. Some of it was brought up.
When you say trial strategy, I mean, you asked the question, so you lied. I mean, you brought out, I think, twice in your direct. So you lied to your co-defendant, who is your boyfriend, right? I mean, so you wanted to get it out in front of the jury to perhaps take some of the sting out of the fact that her version of events was he didn't know anything about them engaging in prostitution, correct? So she was, under her version of what was taking place in Hawaii, she was misrepresenting to him and concealing from him what they in fact were doing, correct? Right. So you asked about that, and then the prosecuting attorney followed up. How was following up improper?
Well, I mean, she went after my client's integrity, her moral integrity in the ultimate act of betraying her boyfriend, her not only her boyfriend, but the boyfriend's family as well. So we felt that that was improper character evidence that was only asked to inflame the jury. I mean, no other purpose other than that.
But wasn't it asked for the purpose of, I guess, illustrating sort of the, I guess, in the prosecution's point of view, the sort of weakness in her position or the sort of inconsistency in her position, the prosecutor sort of pushing her. So wait a minute, you're saying you committed the ultimate act of betrayal. Is that what you're telling us? And that, how does that really get into morality in context of what was going on with your direct and then the cross that followed? How is that a statement about morality?
Well, my thought on that is that if you're asking someone if they're a liar, a cheater, and an ultimate betrayer, that goes to someone's integrity, their morals.
She's already admitted she's a prostitute.
Well, being a prostitute is different than, is a different issue than lying to her boyfriend and betraying him by engaging in prostitution. But I understand the comment.
And why isn't that legitimate cross-examination of regarding the evidence regarding Mr. Ferreira, who was charged with being the trafficker in this instance, pursuant to the testimony of the complaining witness and the independent witnesses who said that Mr. Ferreira said about the complaining witness, she's my bitch. And that, oh, the whole mood changed. So he was charged with trafficking. So why isn't questioning her, the defendant, about, you're saying he's your boyfriend, but does this make sense? Why isn't that kind of a cross-examination appropriate regarding the culpability of Mr. Ferreira?
Well, my thought on that is that ultimately the jurors did acquit Mr. Ferreira on both counts. Also,
how does that have anything to do with appropriate cross-examination? Maybe they didn't, you know, admittedly the complaining witness had problems in her consistency of her testimony. But why does that make the cross-examination inappropriate?
Again, it goes to Ms. Ibarra's character and questioning her character and her moral transgressions. So that's my response.
That wasn't the point of the cross-examination. I think everybody in the courtroom, I think, you know, I wasn't there, you were, understood the state's theory was that they were here as traffickers. They were here together. And
right.
So the prosecuting attorney is trying to say, come on, you know, you're telling us you committed this great, you know, this great moral, you know, immoral act, or you acted in a way that was, you know, untruthful to him. And that's more just trying to get back and forth to test her position as opposed to making a statement, would seem, as opposed to making a statement about her morality. Again, viewed in don't we have to view it in context?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And okay. Anything further on this point at this? You have still some time left for rebuttal?
Yeah, I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
I'm interested, sure. Mr. Takamoto, in a little bit more explanation about the strategy that you were employing when you initially brought this up during direct. What was your strategy?
Well, I mean, my strategy in bringing it up was putting it right up front before the jury that, you know, she admitted that she was a prostitute, and she admitted that she had lied. And so I guess my thought process in asking her the questions was not to hide anything from the jury. You know?
Then when she was asked by the prosecutor whether she thought it was fair that she was sleeping with other men, do you think that was relevant?
No.
What her opinion was about whether it was fair?
I didn't think that was relevant.
And why do you think that's not relevant to the way that she is considering her, I guess you could say, behavior with respect to telling her boyfriend the truth.
And I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
Why wouldn't that be relevant to the issue of whether she was telling the truth when she was essentially, as you said, not telling him the truth about prostituting? Why wouldn't that be relevant to that, her opinion?
You meaning Ms. Ibarra's opinion?
Are you saying it's not relevant because it's for the jury to basically make a decision about credibility and her decision about whether it's fair or not that she was not telling her boyfriend isn't really relevant?
Yes, and also, I mean, she did testify that, you know, she's had to make tough decisions in her life and how she makes her living, you know, and it's not something that she's proud of. You know, the bottom line is, you know, she admitted that she wasn't telling him the truth about that particular aspect of her life. Okay.
Other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Takamoto. Yep, we'll hear from you again. Mr. Vincent. We are.
Thank you.
Stand by for one moment.
Good morning, Your Honors. Before we get into that issue of discussing what's profiting from prostitution, let me just note something that I just discovered when I was looking at the case preparing for the oral argument today. If you look at the jury instructions, and I don't know if the transcript was ordered or when they were actually read to the jury. But if you look at the ones that were given to the jury, the jury was instructed on page, let me see, so the promoting prostitution is on page 25, right? And it relies on the definitions which were previously stated in the sex trafficking instructions. And they're on page 20 and 21. But the jury was instructed on both ways promoting prostitution. And under Jones, State v. Jones, you don't have to be unanimous as to which means you use to the jury finds out. It could have been six people in this case found that he was advancing prostitution. Six people was promoting prostitution. We don't know that because there was no interrogatories, and I don't think there was, and I don't think there was any unanimity instruction that they had to be unanimous as to the means. And in any case, all 12 of them could have been unanimous with respect to advancing prostitution, which. The problem with that is that after the jury had been released and this motion was made and they ruled on the motion, they found that there was insufficient evidence for advancing prostitution. So that creates a problem with whether or not the jury, I mean, if we're going to rely on the circuit court's finding that there was insufficient evidence for the advancing, that means that really it's got to go back for a retrial because we don't know that they were unanimous as with respect to profiting, right? So that's a kind of...
You're conceding error then.
I'm conceding that, yeah, that that what basically what I'm conceding is that the jury was instructed on both ways. I my argument would be that right result, wrong reason. And I would ask this court to review the circuit court's decision on the advancing prostitution means. Because I think that there is sufficient evidence in this case for both the advancing prostitution and the profiting from prostitution, ways of means of producing proving promoting prostitution. So just having said that, I don't know what you want to do with that. But
let me ask you that, Mr. President. And I suppose it sort of dovetails a little bit with what the Chief Justice was asking Mr. Takimoto earlier about, I guess, the aiding for security. Is that what you're suggesting, that perhaps the advancing comes from Ms. Ibarra accompanying Ms. Bethel to some of these?
That would be a way of, I think, generally understood, a way of profiting from the, you know, assistance she gave the complaining witness to come here to Hawaii.
I guess what I'm saying is,
wasn't doing it out of the goodness of heart, for example.
Well, it seems like maybe that's more advancing if she's aiding by, in effect, accompanying and maybe providing some security type of a situation. But I'm also wondering, you know, under that theory, advancing, I mean, don't we have the same sort of problem that Mr. Takimoto's highlighted, that, you know, these statutes are really designed to go after the sex trafficker and the pimp, and not just somebody who is, let's say, a co-prostitute who's not working that day, but just being there for safety purposes?
I think so, and I agree with you. But there are, when you look at the way prostitution works in on the streets, is that there are some gradations between being a prostitute and being a pimp. And we think that Ibarra, she was more on the pimp side. Okay. She was, our theory of the case was that Ferraro was the pimp, right? And that Ibarra was his first wife, however you want to characterize that. She's prostituting, but she's also performing some supervisory functions, right? And in this case, I think there's plenty of evidence that that, you know, Ibarra was crucial in recruiting.
Is there evidence that Ms. Ibarra was perhaps like in a room when Ms. Bethel was committing prostitution?
I think there was testimony that she was in the room
when she did not act as a prostitute herself client.
Just off the top of my hand, I can remember one specific instance where I don't know whether it was Ibarra. I think maybe it was Ibarra herself who testified that she had witnessed the complaining witness committing, I guess, vaginal sex. Mm-hmm. And she had told the complaining witness that she was just engaged in oral sex, I think. And that was, she and I think she talked to the complaining witness about that, if I remember the testimony correctly. And I think that came from Ibarra, so from her testimony, right? So there was sufficient evidence to show that she was performing, I guess, a security function, perhaps a supervisory function, depending on how you look at that.
Well, what's your take on the receiving the profits or profiting from?
Well, I don't
see evidence there. And is it, what's your response to Mr. Takimoto's suggestion that this could ensnare otherwise innocent people, you know, the person at the food truck, the person at the checkout line who knows that the woman who's coming through is a prostitute but accepts money from her that they have reason to believe was proceeds of prostitution?
I think this statute is clear enough that you can avoid being ensnared in it without, with just relatively innocuous things. Transactions. I don't think that.
How so?
Well, first of all, it requires a knowing. I guess the person in the grocery store is selling groceries to her, you know. Guess they might know that she was out in the back committing prostitution a little while ago, and she's using that money to buy a candy bar or whatever. I suppose that's possible, but I think it requires some sort of active it requires some sort of active participation by the person receiving the profit that they know.
What about an agreement that the language I asked Mr. Takamoto about, pursuant to an agreement or understanding? What is the state's view as to what that means or requires the state to show?
Well, here I think that there was a clear meeting of the minds between Ibarra and the complaining witness as to, I'm going to front you the money for the airfare and for half the hotel, and you're going to come to Hawaii and commit prostitution with me.
So there has to be, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Vincent, but you're suggesting there has to be sort of a bargain that's arrived at. I mean, the language of the statute speaks about an understanding. So you would interpret that as to require a bargain, or is it just a loose understanding such as, okay, I realize that for you to be able to pay me, whether it's a plumber, electrician, or a retailer, if there's an understanding for you to be able to pay me, I know that you're going to be engaged in prosecution. That wouldn't be enough because of some reason that there isn't a benefit that goes both ways? I mean, I'm not following you.
Well, I think there was benefit that went both ways here.
But there's benefit that sort of goes both ways. If you are a retailer, you say, okay, I'll give you the food and you give me the money. I understand that the money's coming from prostitution, but that's the deal.
I think profiting from prostitution would require that the person profiting has contributed in some way to the actual prostitution. And I think the retail store selling her just food she needs anyway, right, is not really that level of, it's not really that level of profit.
So you'd read into the concept of understanding that the defendant would have had to have actually assisted with the prostitution.
Well,
I mean, that's adding to the concept of understanding, but if that's your position, then...
I think the selling food in the grocery store is too attenuated, but...
Okay, well, I mean, that makes sense, but...
Another example.
But couldn't this potentially lead to that kind of result unless we, I guess, adjust the meaning of the statute and interpret it in a way that isn't absurd?
I wouldn't have any problems with adjusting it to exclude certain types of behavior, but I think it has to be done in a case by case basis and not a facially overbroad attack on the statute itself. And I think that the facts of this case are that there was definitely an agreement that the complaining witness would not have come to Hawaii, most likely would not have come to Hawaii and committed prostitution if it had not been for Ibarra. Ibarra encouraged her both by word and by paying her money to do so. And I think that falls well within the statute, the promoting prostitution.
Mr. Vincent, let's move away from an innocent third-party example. How about this situation? Say there's a sex trafficker who controls five prostitutes, and these five prostitutes go out every night, except one. One always stays back, and they rotate. And after these four prostitutes go out on the evening, they bring back and give to the one who remained back at their place all the money that they've received. And then that woman gives to the pimp all the proceeds of that evening. Does every fifth day each woman profit from prostitution because they have accepted or received money?
Well, in your scenario, I would say that she did not receive profit in the sense that she remit. Apparently, in your scenario, she's saying she remits all the money she gets straight to her pimp, right? So she's just a conduit, a carry through. But I guess what you're asking is that what if she takes 10%? What if they say, okay.
No, I'm just saying the four of them, and they rotate. One stays back every fifth day. So she's not working every fifth day, but every night, all the four's earnings go to one woman who's a rotating person who's not working that night. Mm-hmm. And that woman accepts and receives that money. And then she herself gives it to the pimp. In other words, the pimp is someone trying to insulate himself. It would seem that, you know, under your theory, that each night one of those women is profiting from prostitution under the language of the statute.
Yeah, I agree. I guess under that circumstances, and under the statute doesn't say anything about profit in terms of financial accounting profit. Okay. Just receiving money, right?
So I guess then I turn now to your, and actually Mr. Takemoto's suggestion that almost like we have to look at these things on a case by case basis. I mean, doesn't that just present difficulties for both the lower courts and the appellate courts to essentially shift the analysis on any one of these cases? I mean, how would that work?
I just think that there are situations that are fairly clear, and also I would suggest to you that Abair in this case, I think there's a reasonable inference that she did actually profit in the financial accounting sense. We don't know how much expenditures there were, and we don't know how much outgoes there were. We don't know whether the amount of money she received from the complaining witness was larger than the amount she spent. But I think that there's a reasonable inference that it perhaps was. Okay, I mean she's.
Are you suggesting Are you suggesting the reasonable inference is that when she said she gave all the money, we will assume that that was more than she needed to pay back? I mean, she did characterize that she was giving it to her to pay her back, but you're suggesting that rather than look at the evidence to say that she was paying her back, we should consider that because she said she gave all the money, there was sufficient money to mean that there was more than what was necessary to pay her back?
I think there's a reasonable assumption she either profited from it or intended over the course of these actions to profit from it. Maybe she was interrupted.
Did you argue attempt? Did the state argue attempt?
I don't think there was.
And there were no attempt instructions, right?
Or accomplice for that matter, right?
But
is perhaps the problem here with respect to the profits from prostitution prong is that there's actually no definition of profit? Should there have been, could we avoid the issue raised by Mr. Takemoto if we define profit to mean you receive more than, you know, in money than the value of what you've given?
Obviously, neither us or the legislator is going to be happy with that interpretation because, I mean, and you do what you have to do, but it's very difficult, as you can see from this case, to pin something on a prostitute and prove that that there was a financial profit from it. It's very difficult to do, and I suspect that's one of the reasons why Mr. Ferreira was acquitted in this case is because it's too hard to connect him with the prostitution.
Could I follow up on that, Mr. Vincent? In this case, if the question was asked of Ibarra, did you receive more than you paid out, or if the question was asked of Bethel, did you give more than was given to you, that would be a step towards proving it, right?
I mean, Barra's theory was all along that she just, it was just refunding her money that she'd fronted for her, right? Bethel does not have access to the accounting records of Abair and Ferreira, right?
Well, maybe she could be cross-examined in the sense if she states a position, but under your point of view, she would have said, I don't know. I don't know how much she paid, but maybe she did. I mean, and maybe she's thinking it's the ticket and she says, no, I didn't. I didn't give her the equivalent of the ticket, or I gave her more than the ticket, or maybe she, like you say, she says, I don't know, but at least that would be one way to prove it.
I think the inference was that she thought that everything was going to Abera, and then when Ferreira showed up, everything started getting ugly, right?
But doesn't that make the point that there isn't really evidence of profit? You were saying that she understood that she was just going to give everything back to her to pay her back, not to give her a profit. Bethel was going to give everything to Ibarra to pay her back.
I think when she said pay her back, I think it was loosely, it was, we're not really going to keep records here. She didn't show me the receipt for the air ticket.
You're suggesting we come to the conclusion she didn't really mean pay her back. She was really saying that Bethel was really saying, I'm going to give her even more than paying her back. But
that's what Bethel was saying, is that I was just giving her all my proceeds, and she was paying for my hotel and this and that, whatever. She needed to be here in Honolulu.
What about the issue of the motion for a new trial and the cross-examination by the deputy prosecuting attorney? Is that misconduct? Should we notice that as a plain error?
I think as Justice Nakayama brought out when she was questioning, I think the purpose of that was rather than attacking her credibility when she said that Ferreira didn't have anything to do with it. I think that was the thrust of that argument, if I remember correctly. Because our theory of the case was, again, was that Ferreira was, he was the pimp, right? And he really doesn't know that she's being prostitution, right? In this hotel. I think that was the purpose of the comment. And I think to that extent, I don't think it was really objectionable.
So the purpose of the questioning was to attack her credibility by showing that it was kind of ridiculous that she would suggest that he didn't know. Was that it? By laying out,
that I think was the
laying out the fact that she had like a life of prostitution, and of course he should have known about it. Was that what you're saying?
I think she had testified that she committed prostitution in other places, and she obviously was committing prostitution on the prior trip when she was texting back to Bethel.
Okay, then help me with this. I'm following your line of analysis that, you know, it was necessary for the rebuttal or to contradict her to show that this was open and obvious that she was a prostitute. But then to go into her personal opinion about, is this an actual betrayal? Is this an ultimate betrayal you're committing? To go into her opinion about whether it's fair. Do you think that was relevant?
Maybe more marginally so, but I still think that the general thrust of the question went to the fact that I think we were at that point, we were trying to convict Ferreira, right? So we wanted to connect him to the, we wanted to get her to admit that he knew something about what was going on here.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's relevant that she's betraying him or that sort of thing, but and her personal, you know, opinion about her character. But
yeah,
all right, I follow your point.
Did you have any other questions about?
Nothing else. Nothing further. Anything to wrap up, Mr. Vincent?
Let me talk really quick about that. There was a 2021 amendment to the promoting prostitution statute. It's Act 68 of 1921, right? Of 2021, right? And they changed the statute somewhat. Yeah, they completely admitted this acting other than a prostitute or patron of a prostitute. And I think they made it clear there that a contrary to this circuit court's decision, And at the on the motion to J or motion to dismiss, disregarding the verdict or not, you know, notwithstanding the verdict, right? Her I guess the reason why they kicked out the advancing prostitution was that they felt that you could not commit advancing prostitution this way if you were actually a prostitute yourself, and it's our position that you can. Okay.
No, but the statute was amended in 2021.
That's correct. But I think
consistent with our position you're arguing today.
Consistent, right.
You would concede, I assume, that statute doesn't govern our determination.
It does not, but I think it clarifies, and I think it gives you some judicial, some intent of what that statute meant before. I would just note that for what it's worth. Also, in the profiting prostitution, in addition to that, they added anything of value, right, which would cover the having somebody around for security purposes, and again that was not, and I think that was not probably not nothing, nothing not, not a clarification so much as a adding on to something, but in this case, Abera received money, and she knew what the money was from, and she knew it was because she had given money for the complaining witness to come here. That's all I know.
Right. Thank you very much, Mr. Vincent. And I will hear Mr. Takamoto's rebuttal.
Thank you. I just wanted to reiterate our position that the complaining witness came here voluntarily and of her own free will, engaged in acts of prostitution of her own free will. But the bottom line is that Ms. Ibarra received money, and the only money she received was basically reimbursement. She was in no way, shape, or form, in our opinion, a pimp or a sex trafficker, and the profits of prostitution is extremely overbroad and cuts against the legislative intent of these prostitution, sex trafficking, promoting prostitution statutes. Just wanted to note a couple of quotes from the legislative intent to support our position. The 2011 Act 145 Standing Committee Report Number 1137 states, however, there are also concerns that some of those engaged in prostitution are victims of human traffickers or others that are thus coerced into prostitution. Accordingly, it is incumbent on the state to craft legislation that combats those who benefit most from the prostitution, the traffickers and the pimps. Your committee believes that thoughtful legislation in those areas will protect those victimized by prostitution, including those coerced into prostitution. In our opinion, the complaining witness in this case was not coerced in any way, shape, or form, and she is in no way a quote-unquote victim. Thank you. If I interested any additional questions.
I'd like to ask you, Mr. Takamoto, I think there was an issue raised by Mr. Vincent about the lack of clarity and whether you had unanimity in the determination of the conviction just on this statute, and whether it might have been a result of a compromise verdict by the jury between advancing prostitution and profiting from prostitution. So what's your position on that?
Mr. Vincent brought this up to me before we started this morning, and I don't recall specifically in the instructions. I recall there being our sale type instruction, and I'm not 100% sure on that. I don't recall the specifics of that whether or not our sale unanimity type instruction was provided in this particular case. I believe it was, but I would ask the court not to allow this or to consider the advancing prostitution. The circuit court did find Ms. Ibarra did not advance prostitution because she was acting as a prostitute at all times. And the state did not cross-appeal the findings of fact and conclusions of law from the circuit court. So I would ask Your Honor, not to consider looking back into whether or not she advanced prostitution. I mean, the bottom line is whether or not she profits. And in our position, she did not. So thank you. Now, any other questions?
There are none. Thank you very much, Mr. Takamoto and Mr. Vincent, for your arguments today. Court will take this matter under advice.
Eku iluna, please rise. Ua ho'oku'u ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolo kolo kie ke hanohano o ka moko aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.